Welcome back to our Psalms of History series. We are working our way through the very last few chapters of 1 Samuel, chapters 30 and 31, and some really pivotal things occurring in the life of David. Seminal things will take place in the life of King Saul, who will ultimately go out into battle against the Philistines. And he, along with his sons, will meet a very tragic end, a brutal death. David has been in a wayward season of sorts for about 60 months. David has been, crazy to think, but he has been in allegiance with the Philistines. Of all people, the Philistines, the mortal enemy of Israel for some couple hundred years. David already waging battle against the Philistines, but now he's come into confidence with Achish, the king of Gath, and he's been given Ziklag, this fortified city. They're no longer him and his men on the run. They're able to hunker down, start a life. David's kind of mini kingdom, so to speak, there at Ziklag, where he can do what he wants without fear of Saul, without fear of the Philistines. There's a measure of accord. They can enjoy things, build a life for themselves. David and his wives, his men and their wives and children. David, though, he leaves Ziklag for a small period of time. And while he's gone, the Amalekites come in and raid the town. They burn it to the ground. And they take all of the women and children, all of the cattle, all of the spoils away. They capture the city. David and his men return, and that's what they discover. A city on fire, and all of the things that they count as dear, completely gone. Uncertain of what's happened, where they've gone. I mean, it's a dicey situation. David has been in rebellion. He's now experiencing the consequences of that rebellion. His men are turning on him. They want to stone him to death. David's in a tough spot. And it's in this moment that he reaches the end of himself that he finds the Lord. For we're told that he turns his attention to the Lord. He seeks the counsel of God, whereas he had been saying in his own heart, this, that, and the other. He's now wanting God's counsel, the wisdom of the Lord, the direction and guidance of God, his blessing. And so it's during this season. He will go, they will retrieve the women and children. They will not only retrieve all of their stuff, there will be a spoil, a greater blessing. God takes care of it. But David's a human, and there are real human emotions that he's experiencing through all of these things. And I think that there are two additional psalms that we can very likely see David penning during this particular time of life. Psalm 38. It's titled Prayer in Time of Chastening. It's a penitent psalm. David, it's a psalm of repentance, very likely written during his experiences here. He begins, O Lord, do not rebuke me in your wrath. To rebuke, to correct. Don't correct me in your wrath, nor chasten me in your hot displeasure. For your arrows pierce me deeply, and your hand presses me down. David's like, I'm already experiencing the guilt, the consequence. I know I've messed up. To chasten, to discipline. There is no soundness in my flesh because of your anger, nor any health in my bones because of my sin. For my iniquities have gone over my head. Like a heavy burden, they are too heavy for me. My wounds are foul and festering because of my foolishness. Again, David acknowledging that he's got no one to blame but himself. Again, it's what makes David so much different than Saul. It's Saul could never own it. And while sometimes it would take David a moment or two, David would come to a place of acknowledging his sin and owning his sin and not blaming others. He says, my wounds are foul. They're septic. They're festering. Why? Because of my foolishness. I knew the truth, but I didn't act upon what I knew, and that makes a fool. He says, I am troubled. I am bowed down greatly. I go mourning all the day long, for my loins are full of inflammation. Ugh. And there is no soundness in my flesh. I am feeble and severely broken. I groan because of the turmoil of my heart. Have you ever been physically ill because of your foolishness? Because of just the repercussions of the decisions that you've made, that's made you, like, it's had a physiological effect. That's what David's saying. Like, I'm sick. I'm tore up. Verse 9, Lord, all my desire is before you. And my sighing is not hidden from you. My heart pants. My strength fails me. As for the light of my eyes, it is also gone from me. My loved ones and my friends stand aloof from my plague, and my relatives stand afar off. Those also who seek my life lay snares for me. Those who seek my hurt speak of destruction and plan deception all day long. But I, like a deaf man, do not hear. I am like a mute who does not open his mouth. Thus I am like a man who does not hear and in whose mouth is no response. It's kind of like David saying, I got nothing to say. Like, I'm really at the end. I've exhausted it all. I got nothing left. For in you, O Lord, I hope. You will hear, O Lord my God. For I said, hear me, lest they rejoice over me, lest when my foot slips, they exalt themselves against me. For I am ready to fall. My sorrow is continually before me. For I will declare my iniquity. I will be in anguish over my sin. But my enemies are vigorous. They are strong. Those who hate me wrongfully have multiplied. Those also who render evil for good, they are my adversaries. Because I follow what is good. And then his plea, his conclusion. He says, do not forsake me, O Lord. You could translate it. Don't let go of me, God. Do not be far from me. Make haste to help me, O Lord, my salvation. That's a great conclusion to any prayer of repentance. Not an appeal of your worthiness or that you deserve anything, but a complete humility. And then the appeal of God to act on the basis of his goodness and who he is. Another psalm I think we could definitely attribute to this particular season. It's not as lengthy as Psalms 38. But Psalms 141, again, 10 verses. Its heading is a prayer for safekeeping from wickedness. It's a psalm of David. Begins, Lord, I cry out to you. Make haste to me. I like the way he kind of turns that. I cry out to you. Make haste to me. Give ear to my voice when I cry out to you. Let my prayer be set before you as incense, the lifting up of my hands as the evening sacrifice. I love that. Let my prayer be before you like incense. Like, may the praises that I sing and the songs that I sing, the words that I'm, may they rise before you like an incense, like with an aroma. The Bible will describe our worship as being a sweet smelling aroma before the Lord, something that God could delight in and experience. Isn't that an interesting thought that there is an experience that God has to our prayers and to our worship, to the time that we spend with him? The lifting up of my hands as the evening sacrifice. Verse 3. Set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. Yeah, almost a proverb in some regards. Something to maybe memorize. Set a guard over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. Lord, and this the state that I'm in, the situation I find myself, the emotions I'm experiencing, keep me from saying stupid things. Guard me. Set a guard. Keep watch. Do not incline my heart to any evil thing, to practice wicked works with men who work iniquity. And do not let me eat of their delicacies. protect me, preserve me, guard me. Again, sometimes when we're at the bottom, we're vulnerable. And there's David taking his cares to the Lord, but also knowing his vulnerability, pleading that the Lord, things could get worse, and I'm capable of that. So Lord, take care of me. Let the righteous strike me. It shall be a kindness. Let him rebuke me. It shall be an excellent oil. Let my head not refuse it. Again, in the midst of his repentance, there's the acknowledgement that there are consequences to the decisions that we make. And again, hey, when the righteous strike me, let me take this as a kindness. Lord, when I'm rebuked, let me perceive this as an excellent oil. Keep me from reacting, from overreacting. In my humility, may there be an action to that. May I be receptive to things, even if they're difficult and they're hard. For still my prayer is against the deeds of the wicked. Their judges are overthrown by the sides of the cliff. And they hear my words, for they are sweet. Our bones are scattered at the mouth of the grave, as when one plows and breaks up the earth. But my eyes are upon you, O Lord, O God the Lord. In you I take refuge. Do not leave my soul destitute. Again, that idea of within the person of God, I take refuge. You know, a refuge is a place of safety. It's a place that provides a natural defense. It's a place, a refuge, where you can trust that you're safe, and you can deal with your ailments. Again, you take refuge when you're wounded, when you're hurt, when you need when you can no longer defend yourself, and you need the defense of someone else so you can deal with other things. Again, the Lord, the person of the Lord, he declares to be his refuge. He closes out verses 9 and 10. He says, keep me from the snares they have laid for me, from the traps of the workers of iniquity. Let the wicked fall into their own nets while I escape safely. Very cool little psalm here, Psalms 141. You know, David writes a lot of psalms about suffering, doesn't he? A lot of them. Why? Because it seems to be the most relatable of human experiences and the most common human experience. That there are more seasons of trial and tribulation and suffering and pain than there are anything else. And that's the consequence of living in a fallen world. And yet it's in the midst of this fallen world, when things swirl around us, that we can find refuge in the person of God, safety and security. If you enjoyed these two psalms attributed to this period of David's life that we find in 1 Samuel 29, 30, 31, I encourage you to check out our website, calvary316.tv/histories. You can stay current with our Harmony of Histories series, as well as all of these psalms that are attributed to these seasons of David's life. God bless.